Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
This is Veronica Monet from the Shame Free Zone. Thank you for joining me tonight. My guest is Robin Trask. Hi, Robin, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, darling. Why don't you give us a little intro? I was going to introduce you, but I figured you could do so much better yourself. For people who haven't heard of you yet.
Okay.
Did I embarrass you?
You surprised me with that one, thanks. I'm used to being introduced. There you go.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I just came from Miami, and they kept wanting to introduce me, and I kept saying, no, let me introduce myself. So I was trying to be considerate, but...
Hey, that's fine. No problem.
Hey, she's the director of Loving More and editor, aren't you, of the Love More magazine?
I'm the editor of Loving More magazine and the managing director of Loving More nonprofit.
Yes. And just all-around pervy, poly, wonderful gal.
Why, thank you.
She throws one hell of a good party, too.
Yes, I do.
Okay, your turn. Go clean up the stuff I didn't do right.
Okay. Basically, I'm the editor and managing director of Loving More Nonprofit and Magazine, which is a magazine for people in multi-partnered relationships.
Yes, and we really should define the word poly, because I got to tell you something. Traveling around the United States doing lectures and workshops, I mention the word poly, and people immediately think they know what it means. And they're either for it or they're against it, but either way, it usually comes down to they think it's swingers.
Yeah, that is the biggest misconception that we probably face in the polyamory movement, is that people think it is swinging, and it isn't. Not that there's anything wrong with swinging. Swinging's great for some people. But polyamory, the difference really, the essential difference I like to tell people is that polyamory focuses on relationships, long-term or committed relationships of some type or another, whereas swinging is really focused on casual sex or sexual encounters.
Yeah, you know, I started off actually in the swing community. I was dating a woman who was married, which actually it was kind of poly of us, but she used to host these lifestyle parties.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly the focus just seemed to be kind of on, you know, hooking up for that one time. It wasn't about getting to know each other long term or anything like that. And, you might actually have sex with the other person's husband or wife, but it wasn't like you were going to get to come over for dinner.
Right. And I personally haven't had any experience in swinging myself. I checked it out when I first started exploring open relationships, and it just wasn't for me. I get involved.
Well, yeah, you know, I think what I like about poly is that, you know, the definition, my understanding is, isn't it mean many loves?
Yeah, it's many loves or loving, you know, yeah, many loves or loving more than one person.
Yeah, which is a lot different than just getting lucky a whole bunch of times.
Yeah, it is. But the best way I try to tell people is I can give them examples. I mean, there's so many ways to be in polyamorous relationships, but for me, I have a primary partner I live with, and I have another partner in New York that I've been involved with for 5 years, and another partner in Hong Kong that I've been involved with for 23 years. And so these are long-term romantic partnerships and relationships.
They absolutely are. So have you been in poly lifestyle for like a quarter of a century, or? Don't you love it that I could have said 25 years, huh?
Yeah, you know, thanks. Actually, I would say I've been identifying myself as a non-monogamous person.
Yeah.
I didn't have the term polyamory at the time I figured this out for myself, for about 19 years now.
19 years, okay.
Yeah, even though I had that relationship for that long.
Yeah.
And he was part of the reason that I did make this decision, because as I started to get involved with people and he had moved away, and I was still very much in love with him and knew that anybody I got involved with, he was going to still be a part of my life, and they just needed to accept that. And he basically decided the same thing. So even though he got married, he told his wife that I was going to be in his life, and if she wasn't okay with that, they couldn't get married.
That was a similar thing with me, because I got a divorce 4 years ago, and I was married in an open marriage, and what that meant was basically we could have sex with other people. I because I was an escort, him, if he wanted to for Father's Day or something, go see a professional. I was okay with that, but the rule we always had was no emotional involvement. And so our fidelity was all about, you know, that we were true to each other emotionally. Then when I got divorced, I realized that I'm very, very much still in love with my ex-husband, and we don't have a sexual relationship all the time, but in the last 4 years we have had a sexual relationship on and off, and we're best friends. I mean, we talk like several times a week. But, there's still, like, this need for me to have other relationships because we're, you know, only seeing each other probably once every 2 or 3 months.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, and then you think, well, how do I invite somebody else into my life when I'm still in love with this other person?
Well, and that's what polyamory opens up the possibility for. It's a possibility to have relationships that fall on different levels. And there's, like I said, there's different kinds. Some people live in relationships where all three people will be involved with each other, living, and they may all live together. So it can be very different for different people. And I know for me that it wasn't, a lot of people question polyamory, you know, well, did you just decide it'd be fun to go date other people and have relationships? For most people, it's not. For most people, it's because they find themselves in love with more than one person, that they come to the conclusion that maybe this is a possibility. And what we do at Loving More really is teach people that that's a possibility. We're trying to open people up to the choice of the possibility of being able to keep a relationship and explore something new if you meet somebody.
Well, if you've been in the same relationship for 23 years, that says a lot about your ability to be poly. What do you think, you know, like you said, there's a lot of different ways to be poly. What do you think your key to success for being able to maintain a 23-year relationship is?
Oh, that's a good question. It's, you know, first of all, I love the person a lot. You know, it's, how do you maintain a poly relationship? They're complicated. But communication, honesty, being radically honest about what's going on. And one of the nice things I've always thought about poly relationships is that I always know the partners who are with me are there because they want to be, not because they're obligated to be.
Yeah.
Even though there's a strong commitment there and a strong love, if they want to, you know, there's always the option, the openness to be able to, you know, if they want to be with somebody else, I want them to be. It's so hard to explain because we don't even sometimes have the words in our language to explain multi-partner because we think in terms of monogamy. It's been so programmed into us that we don't have the time to look beyond it. And when you start to look beyond it, it takes a while. It's an adjustment period for most people. I had a man that I was involved with since high school, actually, until just a few years ago. And for him, he just had the hardest time. He used to ask me all the time why I couldn't just be monogamous. And I asked him why he just couldn't be poly. You know? I said, why do I have to change?
Yeah.
You know, why can't you change? And, you know, what he loved about me was my openness and my honesty and the fact that I loved the way I did.
Yeah, I had a problem with that last year, too. Got into a relationship with somebody who knew, you know, that I had been a former escort and done the porn and that I was still in love with my ex-husband. And then, boy, you know, as soon as we got more involved with each other, it became like, you know, these outbursts of rageful jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just if I, well, actually, he found a naked picture of one of my other partners on my phone. Why, that didn't go over very well.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is that there has to be, you know, at some point in our culture, and this is my opinion, but there's got to be a realization that jealousy is not an excuse to act like a 2-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, that jealousy is not an excuse to act like a 2-year-old, and we use it as an excuse instead of confronting what's really going on. Jealousy is not really about the other person. It's about our own insecurities.
And there's the key point. Don't you think that a lot of movies and songs and poetry use jealous feelings as a testament to how deeply they, oh, I must really love you because the idea of you being with somebody else drives me crazy.
Yeah.
It's like, if you don't feel jealous, huh?
What about putting it this way? You know, if I, you know, when you really love somebody, you love to see them with somebody they love.
I think that's a hard one for a lot of people to grasp. How would you explain that in, like, beginner terms?
In beginner terms?
Yeah.
Well, we call it conversion, but in beginner terms, I would say that it's the same feeling that we get when we love a friend or a child or anyone, that they get what they want. We're happy for them.
Yeah.
Because we love them. And at the same time, I've seen parents get jealous of their children, or siblings get jealous of each other because of them getting something that they didn't get, or, you know, or us get jealous of a friend, you know, who maybe, you know, got something we didn't. They, you know, they got engaged or they got married or they met somebody new and we're jealous. Or you can be happy for that person. There's a certain amount of choice in this and attitude. But for beginners, what I would say is that it's really about looking at yourself and what's really triggering your jealousy. And when we really love somebody, don't we want that person to be happy? If we love somebody and we want them to sacrifice their happiness for us, is that love?
I know. Like, a lot of times now that I've started experiencing poly, and I'm way, you know, I'm very much an amateur compared to you. And that's the interesting thing, too. I mean, you know, I had this open marriage for 13, 14 years that we were together. I was working as an escort the entire time. You would think that I would have understood the whole idea of poly, but it's so different. Poly is so much more responsible, and it's also about, you know, showing up emotionally for a lot of different people or a few different people, but not, it's not about compartmentalizing yourself. So, well, I only love you, but I have sex with that person. You know? So,
well, there's a balance that you have to, there's a balance and there's a way of realizing. I always like to put it to people, and some people it drives them crazy, but we love more than one child.
Yeah.
We love more than one friend. Why is it that with it, when it comes to lovers that we share ourselves with sexually, that somehow that's, we're not supposed to love more than one person? And going beyond that, beyond the sex, if you take it beyond the sex, there's love for people who we might have intimacy with that we don't have sex with, that we have a deep, intimate, and emotional relationship with.
This is another thing that really kind of surprised me, and now I try to explain it, but I maybe you can help me find some ways to explain this more succinctly. People go, oh, isn't that where you sleep with a lot of people? And I go, well, you know what? I actually know poly people who have been in relationships with their partners for so long that those relationships have gone from being sexual to non-sexual, and they still very much consider each other a part of their poly family.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I think one way that I can explain it, I do explain it to some people, a couple of different relationships that I have. One was my husband and I, we were poly our whole marriage. I'm now divorced, but we were together for 18 years in a poly marriage. And he got involved with a woman, and I ended up getting involved with her, which was a surprise to me. It kind of just happened. When he broke up with her and he stopped seeing her, I kept seeing her for a long time, but it was a non-sexual relationship.
Oh.
But I loved her. There was a lot of affection. There was a lot of emotional intimacy. There was a lot of partnership stuff going on. We were helping each other with kids and jobs and all kinds of other things.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was an emotional partner, and I considered her a primary partner even though she wasn't a sexual partner. And she had a certain amount of my time that was devoted to her. And so it's really hard sometimes, I think, for people to understand these gray areas, if you will, between friendship and lovers. There's this huge gray area. I had another man that I got involved with, and I loved him, and I cared about him, and we slept together, and we snuggled, we slept nude. We never had sex. I've never kissed a man.
I understand that. I have friends that I have that relationship with too. I don't know if I go so far as to call them partners, but definitely people that I, when I, we're in the same place, we hook up on an emotional and a physical level that doesn't actually involve sex.
But in monogamy, often, that wouldn't be okay. It wouldn't be okay for me to bring over my best guy friend and sleep with him nude and snuggle.
No.
You know?
Well, but you know, really, seriously, if you watch a lot of the popular media about what it means to be in love and truly faithful, they don't even, it doesn't seem to me that the popular paradigm even allows for emotional connection like empathy.
No.
It's like, you better go talk to your wife about that.
Mm-hmm.
Or go talk to your husband about that, but, you know, you shouldn't be talking to me about that.
And what is considered an affair? I mean, this is a question that comes up all the time when people, I mean, because a lot of people have affairs, and I have recently had an experience of my son seeing somebody where she was married and didn't think of Holly, but she really liked him, and they were becoming good friends. And I realized they're involved already. They're in an emotional relationship, whether they're having sex or not.
This is something my cousin, I think you know her, Alina Gabash. She's the director of the West Spot up in Seattle.
Oh, yeah, okay.
She's my cousin. And I actually consulted with her when I first started being poly because I was so confused. And the first thing she told me, she said, stop talking about your ex-husband as somebody that you used to be in a relationship with. She said, you're still in a relationship with him. It's just changed. And I was like, oh. I don't know, that's so simple, but it would have never occurred to me because the whole idea of relationship is somehow or another, it's everything, right? We're sleeping together, we're sharing the finances, we live together. That's a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then anything short of that is just dating or friends. Or, you know, it's like we've got this really compartmentalized view of what constitutes a connection.
Well, and I've had people tell me, and, you know, this is, I find this very kind of offensive at this point, but I've had people tell me that my relationship with the man that I'm involved with in Hong Kong is not a real relationship.
Mm.
Because I don't get to see him all the time. He lives a long way away. We're both very busy people. He's a professional. I'm a professional. We have busy, busy lives. We have families.
Yeah.
We talk several times a month. When we can, we'll get on the internet and video chat. It's not often,
yeah.
And we're trying to plan a trip to Thailand, but what makes an emotional relationship, what makes him a partner in my life, and why do I consider him that? And
why should other people be allowed to define that?
Exactly. And that was one of the things that really challenged me, was like saying, this person is somebody I love, I romantically, emotionally love. He may not be here, and I may not be having sex with him on a, you know, regular basis because he's in Hong Kong, but when he's here, I do.
Yeah.
And that's and he's an important part of my life. He will always be.
But even if you're not, I mean, you know, some of the poly people that I have come to know have a poly family members that they don't have sex with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But they still very much consider this person part of my poly family.
Yeah.
You know, like for some of the things you were talking about, like child sharing or sharing, you know, some of the big decisions like where are we going to live, where are the kids going to go to school, who's going to pay the bills. And sometimes, you know, what's interesting to me is that if a monogamous couple stops having sex, but they don't have sex with other people or they still have that piece of paper that says that they're married, then they still consider it a marriage even if they're not having sex. But if you don't have that piece of paper and you've stopped having sex, some people will say, well, it's not a relationship.
Right. It's no longer a valid relationship. We use a piece of paper to validate a relationship. Or all these rules that we put on things that we call valid relationships, and what makes a relationship, you know, even the fact that we use how the longevity is to how valid a relationship is. I've known people to be married 35 years, and everybody's celebrating, oh, they were married 35 years, that's wonderful, and they don't even like each other.
Oh, yeah.
They live in separate rooms, they don't talk to each other, but they do celebrate their 35th wedding anniversary.
Yeah.
And you're like, what planet are we on?
Well, we seem to be on a planet that really worships rules.
Rules and, you know, and suffering.
Oh, yeah.
We elevate suffering instead of elevating pleasure and love and connection.
Oh, no. Pleasure's bad.
Pleasure's bad. Wonderful.
God,
what pleasure?
My mother always said, have you done anything worthwhile today? Have you accomplished anything worthwhile? And it is so difficult for me to get away from that training because I'm always thinking, oh, well, that was just fun. That wasn't worthwhile.
No, I totally understand that. But at the same time, isn't pleasure worthwhile? What are we here for if not to experience some of that?
And, you know, they've proven now that a lot of, you know, laughter and joy and relaxation, they extend your lifetime, too. So I, as a person who has to have a utilitarian purpose for everything, I have now been able to justify having fun.
Oh, good. That's good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, whatever works, right?
That's a good thing. No, yeah, and I do understand that it's one of the things that I think sometimes in our culture, especially, I've traveled a lot. I'm sure you have too.
I have.
And in other cultures, often I see them having so much joy and fun built into their world that we don't. We work so hard. We've got this Puritan ethic, as people call it, this work ethic.
Absolutely.
You know, and the only country I've ever been that's worse than us is Japan.
Oh, yeah.
But you go to China, and they're very, at least like when I went to visit in Hong Kong, they're very gregarious and laughing, and there's just a lot of, there's time for joy.
Hmm.
And I find that I found that when I, you know, visit Europe or when I visited, you know, in Mexico especially.
Yeah.
We used to have a construction company, and we do jobs in Mexico, and we always had to plan 3 days, three times longer than it took to do a job here. Because when their son's having a birthday, they take off.
Right, without probably worrying about losing their job in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And we just don't know how to have. And I think that's part of it's the form that need to control what other... I've never understood why people have such a hard time with polyamory, because we don't advocate that everybody's polyamorous or that they need to be.
No.
It's just a choice, and it works for some people and it doesn't for others. But people get so triggered by it.
They do.
And somehow that my having poly relationships is going to affect their having monogamous relationships.
Yeah, because I think they're going with some kind of a mathematical equation, like there's only so many people to partner with and everybody gets one, and you can't take more than your share because then I won't get mine or something.
Well, but when poly, you know, when I've got three male partners and they've got other partners, and then it's just this big network.
Yeah.
And
no.
Everybody's got more than one partner.
You know, the thing that I don't get, how people think monogamy is more loving, because when I think about, and let's talk about compersion a little bit for our listeners that may have never heard that word before, what is the definition?
Compersion, I don't have a definition sitting in front of me, so I will try to describe compersion. Compersion is that feeling of, it's hard to describe because it's an overwhelming feeling of compassion and love and being happy for a person being with somebody else.
Yes.
I can describe a situation where I experienced compersion that just totally surprised me, and that was when my husband and I were involved in a triad relationship with another woman, and we were all three making love, and I was kind of on the sidelines, if you will, a little bit.
Yes.
While my husband's making love to this other woman, and I remember being so thrilled. He was happy, she was happy, I was a part of this, and I was getting to watch in this sacred moment between the two of them, and I was part of that, and I was like, wow, this is really cool. And I was really happy for him. I was happy for him when he first started seeing her.
You know, the other thing, when you think about, like, relationship dynamics, you know how sometimes, you know, you really like somebody or you really love somebody, but there's things about their life choices that you don't really want to participate in or be involved in.
Mm-hmm.
And but there's, you want a piece of their life, a portion of their life. There's certain things you like getting together to do with them.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things that I have found about this is that I can be so much more accepting of my partner's choices instead of trying to control it. Like, you know, oh, I don't want you to get that job or move there or go back to school or whatever, because that's going to impact my life, and I refuse, you know, to let you impact my life that way. Instead, it's like, oh, okay, well, if that's what works best for you, that's cool, because, oh, and I hear you've taken up this new hobby or you want to take a trip to blah, blah, blah. I don't want to, but, you know, I'm really glad that the other person in your life wants to share that with you.
Well, and it can go beyond relationships, too. I think that's one of the things we don't think about. I had a partner of mine. I'm still very close to him and friends with him. We're no longer involved romantically, but he got this opportunity. He's a pilot, and he got an opportunity to possibly go fly biplanes in, like, Arizona. And he comes and tells me about this, and I was thrilled for him. And the other woman he was dating was all just upset and pissed off because how dare him, you know, plan to leave and move away and not talk to her about it, and how could he even think about that in their relationship? And I'm sitting here thinking, does she not know that this is so important to him? From my standpoint, it was like, he's like, you're not going to miss me? I said, I'll miss you, but you know what? There are planes to Arizona. I can come see you.
Yes.
But this would make you happy. I said, wouldn't this make you very happy? And he said, yes, it would. I said, then it makes me happy.
And
doesn't
to
mean
me,
I won't miss
that's
you.
Much more loving than trying to own and control somebody.
Exactly. And we get jealous. I mean, people get jealous not just of relationships, but of jobs or opportunities or
hobby.
Things take our love away from us.
Yeah.
And if we can learn to love ourselves enough to be enough for ourselves, then we can love our partners wholly and not have to expect them to complete us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to take a little quick break here. Don't go anywhere. I'm just going to remind our listeners that this is, in fact, a call-in show. And if you have any questions for me or our guest, Robin Trask, tonight, especially about poly or maybe even if you have some questions about the swingers lifestyle or compersion, you want to hear more about that, or compassion, please give us a call. Or maybe you have a story you want to share with us. Anyway, here's the numbers. If you're in the United States, you can call toll-free at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. In U.S. and Canada, that number is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And then if you happen to be local, the area code is 530-876-3222. Once again, that's 530-876-3222. Feel free to call in. It's completely anonymous. You know, nobody's going to know who you are. They can't see you. And you don't have to give your name. And that's what the shame-free zone is all about, a nice, safe place where you can talk about the things that are on your mind. All right, Robin, back to you. I got a question for you. One of the things that I've noticed about a lot of the poly conferences that I have attended is that they offer a lot of workshops. Now, what's that about?
Well, when it comes to multi-partnered relating, when relating to more than one person and balancing relationships, first of all, we're not taught a lot of good relationship skills, period. But it gets a little
bit... Hey, it comes natural, you know, like sex.
Yeah, right.
Right.
So it can get exponentially more complicated with poly relationships, and that's why we offer workshops and information and education to people on how to make these things work, things like honest communication, making your calendar work, making agreements that work, safe sex. All of these things are important. And then we throw in a few fun things like learning about intimacy and tantric sexuality, just things that will be a little bit more fun and juicy and for the conferences as well. And all of these skills just help to build confidence in our own abilities to relate to people and to handle things as they may get complicated, as we get faced with complicated situations. A lot of our workshops actually do have skill building where you get a chance to practice some of these things, even some role-playing.
this is one of the things that frustrates the heck out of me. I have to tell you, when I'm talking to people who don't know anything about poly, and maybe they think that, this is a way of avoiding your issues and not dealing with your problems. So if you're having a problem with one partner, you just go to the other one. And I think, really? Seriously, this is what you say? Because poly people that I know have such sophisticated relationship skills and such a sharpened idea of what it means to be even honest and open. Usually when I'm talking to people who are in monogamous relationships, they actually kind of seem to go on the assumption that a little white lie, quote unquote, is just something you have to do in order to keep the marriage from going off the rails, you know. Like this, a little lie here or there, you know, everybody does it. It's expected. So when I talk to poly people, it's like, you know, you can't afford to lie because there's too many people involved in here. It would be way too complicated. And it seems
can't keep
like
it all straight.
Exactly. The work that goes into being so incredibly transparent and honest and having, you know, such a heightened level of integrity, it really impresses me.
Well, and I do see that, you know, and there is the other side of it. I think that one of the things that happens to a lot of people is there is some of that that doesn't go on in this community. I generally say that when that is going on, this is why we teach the skills we teach, because when you have that kind of little white lies or misleading or not being totally honest, it will blow up on you very, very quickly. In monogamy, you can do that for a long time and get away with it.
Yeah.
Eventually, it still blows up because you chip away slowly but surely at the underlying trust that a relationship is built on. Jealousy is not nearly as much of an issue as betrayal of trust.
Yes.
Once the trust is gone, you can get past jealousy. If you lose trust in a relationship over and over again, it is very hard to ever rebuild it.
This is what I found in my marriage when my husband and I were basically having an open marriage. The fact that no matter what happened at work, you know, as an escort, this is kind of a complicated thing to try to do. But in the first 2 years, he didn't trust me, and he was scared, and he was intimidated, and it was really difficult. But after the first 2 years, our relationship, basically at that point, he realized that no matter what happened, whether it was good or bad, I'd have excellent clients and not so great clients, and I always told him everything. And if I had had a wonderful time, I'd come home and go, oh my God, this guy's developing a cure for cancer, and he's amazing. And and that honesty, it created safety for him.
And that's what happens. Over time, as you're honest, it's hard at first, and that's what people don't want to face. They don't want to face the hard times. The hard part building trust in a relationship is that there's going to be some possible jealousy or envy or emotions. And part of trust is trusting that our partners can get through that, trusting ourselves that we can get through that.
Yeah.
I mean, trust becomes a very integral part of relationships, but also that trust gives such a security, too, such a safety net, if you will. I know that if my partner wants to be with somebody else, he's going to tell me he wants to be with somebody else.
Yeah.
And that's nice.
Yeah, because if you believe the statistics, about 50% of the married people out there, both men and women, are cheating. And their spouses don't have a clue.
Or they do and they don't want to acknowledge it.
Right, that too.
A lot of people bury their heads in the sand.
God, it's like, I just don't understand it. I want to know. I want to know the truth. And I would much rather have a conversation about it. It gives me an opportunity to deal with it. If I have insecurities, I'd like to be able to talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, and I think that's what builds strong relationships, when you're able to come to your partner and either say, you know, wow, I met this really wonderful person. He's really hot. I think I really want to go out with him, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, God, I'd love to take him to bed, you know, and be able to tell your partner that and have them listen and be able to share that with him. It builds intimacy and it builds trust. And then there's the other part of that, being able to say to my partner, you know, God, I'm feeling insecure, I'm feeling wobbly, I don't expect you to fix it. That's one of the big keys for me, was when I learned that I didn't have, not only did I not need my partner to fix what was going on, I didn't need to fix what was going on for them either. That I could let them be with their feelings and just be supportive.
These are some of the more sophisticated concepts of relationship and communication that I see in poly that really do impress me. So you've got the idea of compersion, which is very much about sharing in your partner's joy. You've got the idea of boundaries, like I hear this is what you want and need. It doesn't work for me, but you can do your thing and I'll do my thing, and we will find where our lives intersect with each other and build around that. And then you've got detachment, you know, an ability to not be an emotionally reactive person,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, and take responsibility for your feelings, knowing that feelings are not facts.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to know all this stuff to make this stuff work.
Well, but you learn it over time, too. It's just like when somebody starts dating as a teenager, most of us went through most of our first dating angst when we were a teenager in high school or junior high school or whatever it was for us. We messed up. It was messy. It wasn't pretty. We had a lot of angst. We had jealousies. We had insecurities. And we learned over time how to deal with them. And it's the same with poly relationships. A lot of adults come into polyamory, and they think they immediately, because they're an adult and they are experienced with relationships, that they're going to be able to do polyamory just fine. And what they find out is that it's complicated, and they go through the same kind of dating curve you do as a teenager.
Oh, wow.
And I think that's what a lot of people don't realize. And they get into this, they fall madly in love, a couple comes in, they meet another couple, they fall madly in love, they all four move in together in 3 weeks, and they don't really know each other. And a month later, it all, you know, blows up spectacularly, and they blame poly rather than the fact that they don't have the skills to deal with what was going on.
Wow.
Or they don't take the time to look at what's really going on or get to know the people. Because it's all hot and it's exciting and it's new and, you know, they've been married for 15 years and they haven't had a new relationship energy in a long time.
Oh, new relationship energy. That was something that really scared the heck out of me, because here I am, you know, having a relationship with my ex-husband, very much in love with him. I get a new boyfriend, and I was so obsessed with the new boyfriend, I thought I was going to fall out of love with my husband, and it scared me. and also, of course, you know, my ex-husband wasn't real crazy about it either, because, you know, it's like he could tell the energy is getting drained off in the direction of the new boyfriend. So it wasn't until I had a conversation with my cousin and she brought out that word. I'd never heard that before, new relationship energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that I went, oh, so there's a name for this and other people go through this. Oh, and it's going to wear off.
Yeah.
So can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I think that is one of the big things, is that we call it NRE, new relationship energy. I also use the term Twitter patience.
What?
I call it Twitter pated.
Oh, Twitter patient. Okay.
It's a term from Bambi.
Yeah.
So, my husband rolled over and said that to me one day. I met somebody new and he goes, "You're Twitter pated." I went, "Oh, I am." But it is one of the warnings I give. You know, it's kind of it's a warning / a nice thing too. Is to learn to balance NRE with the relationships that are long-term in our lives. And, again, I can refer back to children. I had my son, my first son, and I was a single mother when I had him, and I just absolutely adored him. And when I got pregnant with my second child, I was afraid that I wasn't going to love this child as much as I loved my first one.
No.
I was just so scared that, oh, my God, how could I ever love another child as much as I loved him?
Right.
And I do, and I did. And, you know, when he was put in my arms, it was like, you know, this whole new love affair. And yet, as a new mother of a second child, I had to balance that energy with the child, my baby,
yeah,
with the energy of my four-year-old, who needed my love and attention, too.
Yes.
And I sometimes will tell people to think of it in those terms. You have to nurture both relationships. And this is where it gets really hard, because you're so involved in this new NRE and stuff. It's like a new toy. And you have to remember that this person, you haven't seen their warts yet. You know, you haven't fallen in the toilet because they left the toilet seat up yet. You know, they haven't left their smelly socks in your bed. Whatever.
Right.
You know, so you and I actually, for me, I've learned to really realize that when somebody new, that it's new and I enjoy the newness of it, but I remember where, you know, my long-term relationships are supportive and loving, and I learn not to take them for granted. And that's a skill, too. You know, there's a lot of skills involved in this kind of relationship.
Oh, there are. And you've actually got a conference coming up here where people can come to learn some of these skills, right?
Yes, we do. We have a conference coming up actually in the Northern California area at Brook Trails.
Is Brook Trails?
It's outside. It's in Willits, California.
Oh, okay.
It's north of Ukiah and about 2.5 hours north of the Bay Area. And it's July 20th to the 27th. The information is on our website at lovemore.com. And so there's registration information and information on the conference there.
What kind of workshops are you going to have?
Workshops on jealousy, dealing with jealousy, making agreements that work, practicing safe sex. We will have a tantric sexuality class, a class on bisexuality. And those are just the ones I'm thinking.
Yeah, that's an assumption. A lot of people figure if you're poly that you must be bisexual. But that's not always the case, right?
It's not always the case. But a good portion of the poly community is. I think we did a survey in 2000 of 1,000 poly people, and they were also writing about their poly partners. So they were writing about another 4,000 people in the answering of the survey questions. And it turns out that at least on the survey that we did, about 40% of the poly community identifies as bisexual.
So less than half. I'm surprised.
You're surprised?
I am. I thought it would be more like 60%, you know?
Yeah, you know, it could be. It's hard to say because we're leaving out the gray areas. When you say bisexual, it depends on the connotation and what it means to the person. People ask me the question, am I bisexual, my answer is no. I am not bisexual. I consider myself bisensual. And that's a term I just came up with on my own because
yeah.
I was trying to figure out where I fit into this continuum. I really like being with men a lot.
you and me both, honey. And I've had girlfriends, had a beautiful girlfriend there for a year, but, boy, I love men.
Well, and for me, it was that there are certain things sexually that just women don't turn me on sexually. I love cuddling with women. I love snuggling with women. I even love kissing women. And I love being with a man and a woman. If there's a man there, then it kind of shifts the energy for me.
Right, right.
I'm polysexual for sure.
I am more bisexual than you, but I'm definitely not a Kinsey Six. I'm not right in the middle.
Uh-huh.
For people who don't know what a Kinsey Six is, that means you'd be smack dab in the middle. You love men and women equally.
Right.
And I have a preference for men, but I definitely, I mean, like summertime and springtime, when all the women are running around in short shorts and halter tops, I go crazy.
And see, that doesn't do much for me.
Oh, I love
it. Every once in a while, I will meet a woman that just really, wow.
Yeah.
That I get very attracted to, but it's very rare. I think it's happened 3 times in my entire life.
Oh, my God, Robin, you're so not. Honey, I can remember one time in Nordstrom's. Now, as a girl, I'm shopping for shoes, and that's like the part of me that's most girl-like is shopping for shoes. I'm in Nordstrom's shopping for shoes. I see this gorgeous girl with a heart-shaped ass, and I start following her up the escalator. I have no idea what floor I'm on now because I'm just following this beautiful ass. I've almost wrecked the car a couple times from rubbernecking.
And see, that's why I think that the asking the question, the simple question of are you bisexual, can be deceiving.
Yeah.
Because if you don't fall right in the middle, people don't know how to answer the question.
And there is a new trend, actually, and it's not so terribly new. It's been around for like the last 10 years, probably, or 8, something like that. Fluid. You ask people of a certain age about their sexuality, and they'll say they're fluid because they don't want to wear a label.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I'm struggling with myself right now is the fact that people are making these labels. Polyamory is not a label. Polyamory is simply one of the ways in which I describe who I am.
Yeah.
It is not a label for who I am. And, you know, even though I definitely consider myself a polyamorous person, whether I'm single, involved with one person, or five people, I'm polyamorous. It has nothing to do with the number of relationships I have. For me, it's an orientation of the kind of loving that I am. I'm always open to somebody new coming in and a new relationship. And if I meet somebody that I feel a connection to, I want to explore it. Mm. I want the option to explore it.
Right.
But it's only one part of who I am. I'm also a lot of other things, like, you know, I'm a managing editor and I'm a mother. And I hate the term label because they are just descriptive words.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like to think of my relationships, and one of the things that's shifted for me since I've really identified as polyamorous is that I see relationships as being more fluid. It allows me to let my relationships be more fluid and that people can weave in and out of my life. The relationship may never end. It may shift and change, and sometimes they do end. So it gets really convoluted when we start talking about all these different terminology and labels and...
Oh, it does. I think people should be able to self-identify. For myself, I've always, I was a political activist back in the early 90s as a bisexual. I wrote for the very first bisexual magazine, National Bisexual Magazine, Anything That Moves. I was a staff writer for 5 years. I was part of the Bay Area Bisexual Network. We went around and spoke at colleges and universities. So, and I was part of the group that worked really hard to get bisexual added into the Gay Pride Parade. So at the time that I joined this organization, it was, you know, gay, lesbian, and we eventually got them to change it to gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. And I feel very proud about that. You know, it's not like my direct efforts, but I was part of the organization. I was working with them. I was out speaking and writing for the magazine when this all happened. And now, every time any city has a Pride Day, it's bisexual, transgender is on the end of all of them. So
yes, it is.
So
sometimes you're not trying to get poly yet.
What?
Yes, you're trying to get polyamory.
Are you really?
There's a, like, we usually have a booth at the Pride Fest here.
Yes.
And we support it. And we support the organization because we do have a lot of bisexual members and gay members and lesbian members.
Yes.
And there are a lot of people in all those communities. And yet at the same time, polyamory is a big threat in a lot of ways to many people in the GBLT. So.
Yeah, explain that to me.
The fight right now, or the push going on for same-sex marriage, the conservative right is using polyamory as the slippery slope that we need to avoid, so therefore we shouldn't allow this, because if we allow same-sex marriage, then we have to allow
multiple
polymarriage.
Right, because they're like one man, one woman. That's, like, real important to them.
Right.
And then they're also afraid that we're going to start marrying dogs and horses or something.
Well, the last time I checked, my horse couldn't sign a consent form, but...
Well, I got news for you. My dog was a witness at my last marriage. Got his paw print right on the marriage license.
Oh, that's great.
He was our witness.
So you're one of those people they're worried about.
Yeah, I know. I have no desire to marry my dog, but, you know, he made a great best man.
Well, but that's the thing, is they use that argument, and so people have tried to, a lot of people in the gay and lesbian community have tried to distance themselves from polyamory.
Yeah.
And, which I think is a shame, because we're all on the same side. We're all looking for the freedom to be who we are and love how we want to.
I just don't understand why we need to have laws about love.
No, yeah. What difference does it make? In fact, I'm to the point now when they ask me this question, it's really hard for me to answer, because am I for same-sex marriage? Yes and no. I'm actually against marriage.
I hear you. I have mixed feelings about it. Being married to my husband was some of the happiest, you know, years of my life. I mean, really, just, we had a wonderful time, and I loved being married, and I never thought I would. I waited until I was 32 before I got married. It was not one of my life dreams. I wasn't one of these girls who, you know, had fantasized about her wedding day or anything like that. But I was much more focused on the marriage itself, not a wedding day. That's another thing I don't get. I'm like, God, you know, the wedding day lasts for a day. If that's all you put your energy into, boy, are you going to have a hell of a time with the marriage.
Well, what's so funny, it's kind of ironic. I used to own a wedding chapel.
Oh, my God, Robin. You didn't say that.
I used to own a wedding chapel in Houston.
Okay.
And,
okay, well, maybe that's why you turned off on marriage now.
Well, part of it is. And it's not turned off on marriage per se. I'm all for committed relationships and civil unions, where we get into, where people agree to contracts and understand the terms of the contract. What I object to with the current day marriage laws, if you will, is that you get a little pretty marriage license and you sign it and you're agreeing to all these laws of the state you're in, whatever state you're getting married in. And you don't get to see what those laws are or what it is you're agreeing to.
Yeah.
Nobody discloses that to you. And
that
just seems like that's wrong.
It's not just about gays in the military, where we got this don't ask, don't tell attitude.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things are don't ask, don't tell.
But in every other place that we sign a contract, which a marriage is a contract,
yes,
we get to see what we're signing. We get to know. You write out the terms of it. Why we don't do this with marriage is because it's a religious ceremony.
Yes.
And a religious ceremony doesn't belong state-sanctioned. We should have civil unions.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's my belief. We should have civil unions, and those civil unions should be spelled out. And then it doesn't matter. The civil unions become, you know, you can define those however you want to, but the civil unions, and I definitely think same-sex marriage should be allowed. Same-sex marriage is not the same as, polyamorous marriages. If you change and allow polyamorous marriage, you have to change the laws because you've got property law and all this other stuff involved. Same-sex marriage, you don't have to do anything. You just let them get married.
True.
Everything, all those same laws are going to apply. So it's a very different,
are you for polymarriage?
I'm not for or against it.
Yeah.
I think if people want that, they should have a choice to be able to enter into a legal marriage. I personally don't want the state sanctioning my relationships.
Yeah, I'll tell you, getting married is a lot easier than getting divorced.
Yes, it is.
And we had a completely friendly, we were actually making out in the judge's chambers, and he, when it was our turn, he looked at us, he says, so I guess neither one of you is contesting this, huh?
That's funny. Yeah. See, my marriage did not end so amicably, but unfortunately.
Yeah.
I think it is very, very strange that we don't get the chance to have some things that we agree to ahead of time that are in writing. And that's part of the reason I feel so strongly about this as a woman, as a mother who spend a lot of time staying home with my children and stuff. When it came to getting divorced, it wasn't an easy process for me. And that's part of why I feel so strongly about the marriage and the way that we should, you know, the way I think that the government needs to change how they do it. Civil unions, when we have people who want to get into a poly marriage, if you will, because you're not legally allowed to be in a polygamous marriage.
Yeah.
We recommend that people do form LLCs for property.
Mm.
And if they have...
An LLC being limited liability corporation.
Yes.
Yeah.
And using that to buy property and things like that, and everybody owns a certain amount of shares. Then it becomes very much simpler to divide things up should there be a divorce or splitting of the... splitting the assets is much easier if people split up.
Yeah.
It also protects everyone. So that's often what we'll recommend to people if they, you know, when people ask us that question, how do you share property in a way because we're not really allowed to. So that's one of the ways that we recommend. There's other things that we recommend to people, is, you know, entering into agreements that they actually sign and getting a lawyer if you have a custody issue. There's actually a triad that has children. They have twins.
Triad being three people.
Three people. They all live together in a triad. And they're raising twins together, and they have joint custody, all three of them. And they did this through lawyers.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
And they spelled it all out when they were having the children so that, you know,
it just goes to prove what I said. Poly relationships are incredibly sophisticated. we're getting down to the last couple of minutes here, and I wonder if you want to tell the listeners again about your website and the wonderful magazine, which, let me toot my own horn here, in the current issue I have an article about poly as a path to peace.
Yes, it's a great article.
Thank you. So tell us about the magazine.
The magazine's been around, actually, Loving More, the magazine's been around since 1991. Love itself as an organization, not under the name Loving More, but has been around since 1986. This is our 22nd year of polyamory conferences. We've been running them for a long time.
Yeah.
And we have our website, lovemore.com, which we're in the process of upgrading. There's lots of information there. There are forums. There's information on the conferences, information on the magazines. And soon we're going to have personals on there, personals and chats. And we're doing a lot of upgrades to our website here in the next few months.
And how can people reach you, Robin?
They can reach me at 303-543-7540. Our hours are 9 to 6 Mountain Time, Monday through Saturday. And they can also reach me at Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, at lovemore.com. Any questions, we're happy to answer them. We're happy that we answer our phone. We're always glad to help people get information. We have a bookstore with all kinds of wonderful books on polyamory and poly relationship skills.
So, and what are the dates again for the conference in Willits?
The dates for the conference in Willits, that's our West Coast conference. We actually run...
Yeah, by the way, a lot of our listeners are from the 53 area code, 530
oh, cool.
area code in Northern California, so they're not terribly far from where you're
going
to be having
not.
This
it's
conference.
Actually, we'll actually be driving through that area code on our way there.
Yeah.
But it's July 25th through the 27th, and all the information is on the website. Again, you just click on conferences when you go to the website, lovemore.com. And our presenters come from California, Colorado, Arizona. We have presenters coming from all over the U.S., including the East Coast. And we run... two other major conferences a year, Poly Living, which is a hotel conference on the East Coast, and our East Coast Loving More Retreat in September. So there is a lot going on.
There is a lot. Robin, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Well, thanks for having me.
Will you come back and talk to me some more? Maybe we can talk some more about the kind of skills required to have a successful poly relationship?
Absolutely. I would love to.
Great.
And I thank you so much for having me, Veronica.
Oh, it was fun. It's fun. I can't wait to do it again.
Yeah, me too. Thanks.
Bye, hon.
Okay.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. I want to let you know I'm going to have a special show at a special time tomorrow, 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time tomorrow, Tuesday, June 10th. That's not my usual time slot, but I'm pre-recording a show, and if you want to join us for live call-in, my guest is going to be Amanda Brooks. Now, Amanda Brooks wrote a very smart book called The Internet Escort's Guide. So it should be a really, really tantalizing interview. And, you, again, feel free to call in or just come listen in if you want. And I want to just make sure you know where my website is. You can check out what I can do for you at www.sexwithoutshame.com. Once again, that's sexwithoutshame.com. And you can also call me, well, any time of day. I'd only pick up 10 to 10 Monday through Friday. But the phone number, toll-free, is 888-903-0050. That's 888-903-0050. And you can always send me an email at veronica@sexwithoutshame.com. That's veronica@sexwithoutshame.com. If you have any trouble finding any of this stuff, just go to your Google web browser, put in Monet, M-O-N-E-T, that's like Claude Monet the painter, and the word sex, and you'll just get pages and pages of me. But don't believe everything you read, only some of it's true. Okay, until next time, thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll talk to you tomorrow, hopefully. Bye.
Veronica Monet offers help, healing, and hope in the form of private telephone sessions. Email veronica@sexwithoutshame.com to schedule an appointment, or visit www.sexwithoutshame.com to find out what Veronica can do for you.